Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Well, we talked about Hamas and we talked about disarmament, and they're going to be given a very short period of time to disarm, and we'll see how that works out. But if they don't disarm, as they agreed to do, they agreed to it, and then they'll be held to pay for them, and we don't want that.
President Trump meets with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at Mar-a-Lago, warning Hamas to disarm even as Israel's repeatedly violated the so-called Gaza ceasefire with near daily attacks. Trump also expressed support for Israel's threats to launch new attacks on Iran. We'll speak with Palestinian-American journalist Rami Houri and Israeli reporter Gideon Levy. Then, as millions struggle with rising food and living costs, the Trump administration's plans to resume garnishing the wages of student loan borrowers in default.
Donald Trump ran promising to abolish the Department of Education. He's actually turning it into the Department of Debt Collection.
We'll speak with Julia Barnard, higher education team lead at the Debt Collective, and the former student loan ombudsman at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Also starting January 1st, health care costs expected to double or triple for millions across the United States.
The elimination of the enhanced premium tax credits and the Affordable Care Act will cause millions and millions of people to lose coverage, probably 12 million. Already, people in the United States owe about $200 billion in medical debt. We can only expect that debt to increase.
We'll look at what's at stake with Elizabeth Benjamin, Community Service Society Vice President and member of New York Mayor-elect Zoran Mamdani's transition team. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The U.S. conducted another strike against a boat in the Pacific, killing two people. The U.S. Southern Command announced the strike on social media and did not provide any evidence of alleged drug smuggling. Since September, the Pentagon's claimed 30 attacks on boats in the Caribbean and Eastern Pacific, killing at least 107 people. This comes as the Trump administration's built up military forces in the region as part of a pressure campaign against Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. Meanwhile, U.S. officials say the CIA carried out a drone strike on a port facility in Venezuela last week. It's the first report of a U.S. attack on a target inside Venezuela. CNN reports the strike targeted a remote dock on the Venezuelan coast that the U.S. government claims is being used for narco trafficking. President Trump revealed the strike last week and, when questioned, repeated it Monday without providing any evidence of drug smuggling.
There was a major explosion in the dock area where they load the boats up with drugs. They load the boats up with drugs, so we hit all the boats, and now we hit the area. It's the implementation area. That's where they implement, and that is no longer around.
President Trump was speaking next to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Trump expressed support for Israel's threats to launch new attacks on Iran. Trump's remarks came as he hosted Netanyahu at Mar-a-Lago. It was the fifth visit by the Israeli leader to the U.S. since Trump retook the White House. Responding to Netanyahu's claims that Iran's rebuilding its nuclear industries following U.S. and Israeli attacks last summer, Trump said, quote, "We'll knock the hell out of them," unquote. Separately, Trump warned Hamas will, quote, "have hell to pay if it refuses to disarm during the upcoming second stage of the U.S. brokered ceasefire agreement."
Well, we talked about Hamas and we talked about disarmament, and they're going to be given a very short period of time to disarm. and we'll see how that works out. Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner will be in charge of that from our side. But if they don't disarm, as they agreed to do, they agreed to it, and then they'll be held to pay for them.
Trump made no reference to the hundreds of times Israel's violated the ceasefire since it took effect October 10th. Trump also claimed he'd recently spoken to the Israeli president, Isaac Herzog, about a pardon for Netanyahu, who faces charges of bribery, fraud and breach of trust in three separate cases in Israel. President Trump said Herzog promised a pardon is, quote, on its way, though Herzog's office later denied the claim. Meanwhile, Netanyahu announced President Trump will become the first non-Israeli citizen to receive the Israel Prize, the nation's highest civilian award. The announcement came as President Trump was caught on a hot mic complaining to Netanyahu that he'd been denied a Nobel Peace Prize. We'll have more on this story after headlines. Hamas has officially confirmed its longtime spokesman, Abu Obeida, and former leader in Gaza, Mohammed Sinwar, were killed earlier this year, confirming Israel's announcement. Back in May, the Israeli military said it had killed Mohammed Sinwar, the younger brother of the former Hamas leader, Yahya Sinwar. 3 months later, Israel said Abu Obeida had also been killed. In a video statement, a new Hamas spokesperson appeared on camera masked and announced the group remains committed to the October 10th ceasefire, but, quote, will not give up their weapons as long as the occupation remains, unquote. Since the U.S. brokered ceasefire took effect, Israel's killed at least 414 Palestinians, wounding more than 1,100. Somalia has condemned Israel's recognition of the breakaway region of Somaliland, calling it a, quote, direct and grave threat to international peace and security, unquote, in a letter to the United Nations Security Council. The letter also says, quote, we further note with deep concern reports that this recognition may serve as a pretext for the forced relocation of Palestinians to northwestern Somalia, unquote. Last week, Israel became the first country in the world to recognize Somaliland as an independent state. Meanwhile, other countries refused to recognize Somaliland. The Arab League's UN ambassador told the Security Council it's rejecting, quote, any measures arising from this illegitimate recognition aimed at facilitating forced displacement of the Palestinian people or exploiting northern Somali ports to establish military bases, unquote. In Somalia, demonstrations against Israel's recognition of Somaliland spread across the country as protesters waved flags and called for national unity. In Iran, protests erupted Monday over the country's falling currency and dire economic situation. Merchants and shopkeepers near Tehran's Grand Bazaar closed their businesses and joined demonstrations. Footage posted on social media showed demonstrators chanting Azadi, the Farsi word for freedom. Another video shows security forces in riot gear confronting the protesters and firing tear gas. Since Iran's 12-day war with Israel back in June, Iran's currency has lost 60% of its value. On Monday, the head of Iran's central bank resigned as protests spread throughout Iran. Russian President Vladimir Putin has ordered his army to take full control of the Zaporizhzhia region of southern Ukraine after a Russian commander said his forces were less than 10 miles from its capital city. Putin's order came as the Kremlin accused Ukraine of launching a drone attack on one of Putin's presidential residences. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky rejected the claim, calling it, quote, a complete fabrication intended to justify additional attacks against Ukraine, unquote. Meanwhile, many residents of Kyiv remain deeply skeptical that President Trump's discussions with Putin, Zelensky, and European powers would bring Russia's war on Ukraine any closer to an end.
We see our enemy. We know that talks don't stop him. Only real strength can stop him. Our soldiers now provide this strength, so it is unlikely that these talks will stop the war.
China launched large-scale military drills around Taiwan for a second day Tuesday, Taiwan says it detected 130 Chinese aircraft and 22 vessels near the island. It's the highest number recorded on any day over the past year, according to an analysis by the South China Morning Post. Beijing called the deployment of forces a, quote, stern warning following the U.S. sending an $11 billion arms package to Taiwan. In Kosovo, the Albanian Nationalist Party of Albin Kurti has won a landslide victory in snap parliamentary elections held Sunday. Kurti has called for an expansion of social services and higher salaries for public workers as party's victory breaks a 9-month political deadlock that's been in place since inconclusive elections in February left Kosovo without a functioning government. Voters in the capital, Pristina, were hopeful Sunday's election marks a turning point.
No one living in Kosovo, nor those from the diaspora, have been satisfied with the political blockade that existed. And perhaps eventually there will be positive results and the political parties will be forced to find a solution, because this is holding the country back.
In economic news, new data shows U.S. corporate bankruptcies surged this year to levels not seen since 2010. At least 717 companies filed for bankruptcy through November, a 14% increase over last year. This comes as a new poll commissioned by The Guardian found nearly half of U.S. residents say their financial security is getting worse, compared to just 1 in 5 who say it's improving. 57% believe the U.S. economy is currently in a recession. Meanwhile, President Trump's continuing to blame Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell for the state of the U.S. economy. On Monday, Trump called Powell a fool and said, "I'd love to fire him." A federal judge in California has dismissed an indictment against a TikTok streamer from South Los Angeles who was shot by ICE agents who surrounded his car during an immigration enforcement operation in October. Carlitos Ricardo Parias had faced charges of assault after agents accused him of using his car as a weapon to ram two of their vehicles. But newly released body cam footage from the ICE agent who fired his gun shows Parias did not move his car. Instead, the footage shows the agent smashing through a passenger window, pointing his gun at Parias and threatening to shoot him if he didn't get out. The agent then fires, striking Parias in the elbow. A deputy marshal was struck in the hand when the bullet ricocheted. On Saturday, U.S. District Judge Fernando Aguin ordered the case against Parias dismissed, saying he was deprived of his constitutional rights when the government moved him to an ICE processing center 90 miles east of Los Angeles following his release on bond. The Trump administration is set to use a public health regulation drafted during the early days of the COVID pandemic to deny immigrants access to asylum. The regulation, taking effect Wednesday, will allow the U.S. to deny asylum claims at U.S. ports of entry based on, quote, emergency public health concerns generated by a communicable disease, unquote. This comes on top of a broad asylum ban Trump imposed on his first day back in office, despite U.S. obligations under international law to provide pathways for resettlement or asylum to those fleeing persecution. And Bangladesh has declared 3 days of state mourning after the nation's first female prime minister, Khalida Zia, died in the capital, Dhaka. She was 80 years old, longtime leader of the Bangladesh Nationalist Party, and served 3 terms as prime minister. Bangladesh's interim leader, Muhammad Yunus, wrote on social media, quote, "Through her uncompromising leadership, the nation was repeatedly freed from undemocratic conditions and inspired to regain liberty. The nation will remember her contributions to the country and its people with respect," he said. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show with President Trump's meeting at his Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Trump expressed support for Israel's threats to launch new attacks on Iran as Netanyahu claims Iran's rebuilding its nuclear industries following U.S. and Israeli attacks last summer.
Now I hear that Iran is trying to build up again, and if they are, we're going to have to knock them down. We'll knock them down. We'll knock the hell out of them. But hopefully that's not happening. I heard Iran wants to make a deal. If they want to make a deal, that's much smarter.
Separately, Trump warned Hamas to disarm during the upcoming second stage of the U.S.-brokered ceasefire agreement, even as Israel's repeatedly violated the truce with near-daily attacks on Gaza.
Well, we talked about Hamas, and we talked about disarmament, and they're going to be given a very short period of time to disarm, and we'll see how that works out. Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner will be in charge of that from our side. But if they don't disarm, as they agreed to do, they agreed to it, and then they'll be held to pay for them.
President Trump also claimed he recently spoke to Israeli President Isaac Herzog about pardoning Netanyahu, who faces charges of bribery, fraud, and breach of trust in three separate cases in Israel. Trump said Herzog promised a pardon, quote, is on its way, though Herzog's office later denied the claim. Meanwhile, Netanyahu announced Trump would become the first non-Israeli to receive the Israel Prize, the nation's highest civilian award. The announcement came as Trump was caught on a hot mic complaining to Netanyahu he'd been denied a Nobel Peace Prize. For more, we're joined by two guests. In Tel Aviv, Gideon Levy is with us, an award-winning Israeli journalist, author, and columnist for the newspaper Haaretz and a member of its editorial board. His latest book, The Killing of Gaza, reports on a catastrophe. And in Cambridge, Massachusetts, we're joined by Rami Khoury, Palestinian-American journalist, distinguished public policy fellow at the American University of Beirut. He's also a non-resident senior fellow at the Arab Center, Washington, D.C. Welcome you both to Democracy Now! Rami Khoury, let's begin with you. Talk about the significance of this Mar-a-Lago meeting that dealt with everything from the U.S. saying they'd support, again, a strike on Iran, to saying Hamas must disarm before the second stage of a truce.
Well, the significance of the meeting is that it reconfirmed most of the fears that most people around the world have about what the U.S. and Israel are actually doing or planning in Gaza, the rest of Palestine, and the wider Middle East. There were very, very few, if any, specifics at all of the plans ahead for so-called phase two of the Trump-Netanyahu plan. Phase one has not been implemented fully. Almost every statement that Trump and Netanyahu made was either inaccurate or a deliberate lie or vague or irrelevant or warmongering, threats, sanctions, we're going to beat the hell out of them. It was quite an extraordinary performance of two men who are known for their love of warfare and bravado, a tough guy, talking, and they performed almost like cartoon characters. We're going to beat the hell out of them if they don't do this. They're going to this and that. And with very, very few, if any, really no specifics whatsoever. And this is the concern that most people have, that what this tells us or suggests that this situation is a continuation of the American-Israeli drive that's been going on for some years now to reconfigure the Middle East, at least the Levant, West Asia part, into a new colonial arrangement whereby the U.S. and Israel dominate what goes on in the region. They give orders to everybody and they set the rules and they grab whatever territory they want. If they want to make a resort, if they want to make an Israeli Zionist colonial settlement, if they want to set up a military base, that they can do anything they want. It was really quite depressing, but also a very, very accurate reflection of and culmination of a century of Zionist and Israeli linkages with Western colonial powers, the British and then the Americans, in dominating this region and playing with it like they were like playing a game that was a combination of monopoly and risk, that you move people around, you buy this, you set up a hotel, you have a beach resort here, in the investment there. So it was quite distressing, but an accurate reflection of where we are in the world.
And Rami Huri, during the press conference, Trump claimed that Israel was abiding by the ceasefire, despite the fact that over 400 Palestinians have been killed since the ceasefire was agreed to. Your response to this claim?
Well, this is a reflection of what I said, that almost every statement that Trump or Netanyahu made is either an outright lie, or an exaggeration, or a diversion. It's not accurate. It's not the truth. The truth is that maybe 10-15% of what they agreed on in the phase one of the plan has been implemented. The Israelis are killing, bombing, attacking, starving. They now have a new weapon, which is to freeze babies to death. Palestinian babies are dying by freezing, one-year-old, one-week-old, two-week-old babies. And this follows the last 2 years where Israel has killed Palestinian babies in Gaza with starvation, with bomb attacks, with fires, with lack of medicine, lack of water, lack of food. It's unbelievable what is happening, and it's continuing. And this is part of the problem that the American president, at least for now, we don't know if his position is going to stick. He's very erratic, mercurial. He could change. And maybe there's stuff going on behind the scenes that we don't know. But from what he says, he's fully supporting whatever Israel wants to do in continuing its genocide and possibly even following Israel into Syria, Lebanon, and Iran.
I also wanted to ask you, in flying to the United States, Netanyahu's aircraft, according to flight tracking data, crossed Greek, Italian, and French airspace. All three of those nations are signatories to the Rome Statute, which obliged them to arrest Netanyahu because of his outstanding arrest warrant from the International Criminal Court for war crimes. Your response to this failure of these European countries to act?
Well, this raises another really important and distressing factor of issue that's going on now, has been for some years, which is the Israeli-driven American collusion in shredding not just Palestinian babies and tents and homes in Palestine, but shredding international law and existing conventions on war crimes, human rights, sovereignty. So the Israelis basically say, we don't, these rules of law, rules of war, the International Criminal Court, all these things, they don't apply to Israel. We're exempt from all this. And the Americans seem, the president at least, seems to go along with this. And this is troubling, but it's a sign that the Arab-Israeli or the Palestinian Zionist conflict is now expanding because Israel is pushing policies all around the world that protect it and favor it, and are now impinging on fundamental rights, not only of states around the world, but individual rights. For instance, in the U.S., it's very difficult to teach a course on Palestinian Israeli history or Palestinian resistance, as it used to be very routine, but now you can't do it. So public libraries are being restricted in what they can do. Media is being restricted to a large extent, the mainstream media. And this is one of this is another factor that law doesn't matter anymore. We're into a lawless world, which is really taking us into the new phase of colonialism, as I described it.
Let's bring Gideon Levy into this conversation, the award-winning Israeli journalist on the board, editorial board of the newspaper Haaretz. Can you talk about the significance of this meeting at Mar-a-Lago, Netanyahu's fifth, what it means with the threat to Hamas, and then also this whole issue of Trump saying he spoke to the Israeli president, he's going to be giving Netanyahu a pardon, and then the president's office in Israel saying that wasn't true?
It's very hard, Amy, to speak about the significance of a meeting in which what you got was only warm air, all kind of cliches, all kind of threats, things which are, as Rami rightly said, things which are totally disconnected with reality, and you don't know to find yourself there. I agree almost to everything that Rami said, except of one thing. It was not a two-man show. In this case, it was a one-man show, because Netanyahu was absent yesterday. It was all about Donald Trump. And Donald Trump presents himself as someone who promises the sky, who has no demands from Israel whatsoever. This was really outrageous. They should do this, and they should do this, and they should do this. And a country that slaughtered 20,000-30,000 children in Gaza has no accountability for anything in his eyes. And they are not, at least at the press conference, there are not special requirements from this country. It's all requirements from all the other actors. And this by itself is outrageous. And then comes another point, obviously, that by the end of the day, they are coming from two different schools. Because for Trump now, the most important thing is to get a deal. No matter how, no matter what, he wants to see deals. For Netanyahu, the main strategic goal is to continue in all four fronts, to continue to fight, not to put an end to any of the disputes there, neither in Lebanon, nor in Syria, nor in Iran, and obviously not in Gaza. Trump doesn't speak about redeployment and taking out the Israeli troops from Gaza. I mean, that's a core issue. What about it? It's even not mentioned. Who cares if the Israeli army will stay there or not? This is something marginal. And then came, obviously, this unbelievable intervention in a sovereign other country, in the legal system of a sovereign other country. A journalist, not really a journalist, but a spokesperson for Netanyahu, raised the question about the pardon, by chance, obviously. And here he is back, Donald Trump calling to pardon Netanyahu, intervention in the legal system, in the middle of a legal procedure in another country, spreading also, I don't want to say lies, but President Herzog denied that he spoke with Donald Trump after he got his letter. So in any case, it was embarrassing. I think the most accurate way to describe yesterday's press conference was embarrassment.
I also wanted to ask you, Gideon, about Israel becoming the first country in the world to recognize Somaliland, the breakaway region of Somalia, as an independent state, coming as other countries refused to recognize it. And today, large protests took place across Somalia. This is Somalia's U.N. Ambassador Abubakar Daher Osman addressing the U.N. Security Council Monday during a special meeting on the issue.
A3+ unequivocally reject any steps aimed at advancing this objective, including any attempt by Israel to relocate the Palestinian population from Gaza to northwestern region of Somalia. This action is not only unlawful, but is morally reprehensible.
So Gideon Levy of Haaretz, can you talk about the significance of Israel becoming the sole nation to recognize Somaliland and this reference to using it to for Palestinians to be sent there?
It's funny and ironic that the only country in the world, except of the United States, which opposes any kind of recognition in a Palestinian state, in the rights of the Palestinian people, and so forth and so forth, is now the only country which recognizes some other entity which nobody knows exactly to describe, and nobody knows exactly what is the nature of this country and where are they aiming. Israel as a pariah state is functioning in recent years with total ignoring of the international community. No matter what the international community says, no matter what are the resolutions, Israel is playing as if it is the only international actor. And therefore, go ahead.
No, it's back on the West Bank.
Gideon, I wanted to just break in to ask you about the death of Mohammed Bakri. You wrote a piece for Haaretz. Israel crushed Mohammed Bakri for daring to express Palestinian pain as it is. I wanted to ask you about the acclaimed actor and filmmaker who died at 72 and